it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Second straight day, Zach Benson is a lead item for us on Sabres Live. Yesterday, it was about his return to the Sabres lineup, and now it's about a triumphant return amidst Buffalo's first victory of the year. 8-4 over Ottawa, a late-night scoring change allows Benson to share some company with Pierre Turgeon as the two youngest four-assist guys in Sabres history.
What is going on with that? Like, waking up in the morning and all of a sudden we have... Are we redoing our Lexus leader from last night? Because Benson now has four assists. Thought Doan had a fantastic game, but it was between kind of Benson and Doan for the impact on the game. We're not going to redo last night's post game, but good on Benson. I felt like that brought some energy, especially in the second period where the game could have changed and turned the other way. The penalty kill, the McLeod goal, some really, really strong play on the wall at the blue line to keep the puck in on the Zucker power play goal. So good on Benson. He gets rewarded because they watched the video and they said, for his hard work, we'll give him an extra assist.
And Buffalo is now one of 19 teams in the NHL to have an empty net goal to their credit.
Yes.
And you know where I stand on empty netters. And
for winners.
For winners, and if you do so at least 20 times in a season, you all but guarantee yourself a playoff spot. So 19 more, and Buffalo will be in fine shape, in my opinion.
So this is interesting because we're seeing a lot of double empty net goals in games, right?
Yep.
And so is this 20 goals or 20 games with an empty net goals? Because it could be a different thing. Like
it could be, but I tend to just stick to the 20 goal total. But you're right. Detroit had two last night in their win over Florida. That's the next opponent for Buffalo on Saturday. But let's dive in a little deeper on the game, especially from the particulars who were involved in it. I mean, there were eight multi-point scorers. There were 13 total players that found the score sheet for Buffalo. But it was where and when that, you know, that happened on the score sheet that the game kind of changed. And from Doan's standpoint, it was really interesting because they found themselves down 2-1. They failed on the challenge for goaltender interference. But it seems like when you listen to Josh, that there was absolute confidence in that situation, despite being down a goal.
I don't know if we have the clip. I can't hear it. So I will just, you're right, Duffer. Like, look, Josh Doan talks about the special teams. I'll say this. Okay. So when the first power play happened in the game and Rasmus Dahlin took a couple of shots from the middle of the ice on the power play, Duffer, mm-hmm. I wrote it down on my sheet and I was like, this may change the fate of the power play. What is something I've talked about on the power play in the first three games? That shot from the middle. Very first power play, boom, puck back to the point, shot from the middle. Mm-hmm. Zucker was off to the side a little bit, so Marilainen made a glove save. But a couple of shots from the middle of Dahlin, it changes things. Yes, they got a good bounce on Quinn. But you're right, like Doan talks about the power play.
No, the penalty kill, Marty. That's
the penalty kill,
going.
The special teams,
because
right?
That's what it is. They felt that the challenge was fine, whether they were going to lose it or not, because how the penalty kill's been going. And then it ends up kind of opening the floodgates for them, ironically.
It was 13 for 13 after the first period, technically, in the season. And yes, they give up a goal that made it 2-1, a power play goal. That was the first power play goal the Sabres have given up all year, the only power play goal they've given up all year. And Lindy Ruff challenged it, and I felt like it was a really good challenge. Number one, it's early in the second period. You know what? Like, there's still a lot of hockey left. Number two, Ridly Gregg goes in like a madman, recklessly into the crease, makes contact with Alex Lyon. Bo Byram grabs him by the neck, pulls him out of there. But by that point, the contact's already happened. There has to be a grace period after the fact of a continuous play. And then the puck is there. Jake Sanderson comes in and pokes it in, and it barely goes over the line. But I thought it was a good challenge because I felt like they had an argument. Now, the league didn't see it that way. And the league, we've talked about it earlier on this week on the, you know, on the coach's challenge and some of the different calls I would have made. And so I would have gone the other way on that one, but that's fine. Your penalty kill has been really good. And Lindy Ruff had full confidence in it. And it actually led to some energy because McLeod and Benson were flying on that penalty kill. Up the ice, they get the shorthanded goal. There was some energy driven from the challenge. And Lindelof saying, guys, I'm with you. Let's go. Like, I trust you guys and we'll get it done.
Well, they got more emotional after the Tuck penalty too, right? Like, that's the thing. The hole got deeper based on the brief 3-on-5 situation they were facing. And then it turned from there. So I think the moral of the story is more emotion, which is kind of what the coach was seeking all along, right?
Yeah. I mean, even when Alex Tuck got this penalty, look, do I think it's a penalty? Yeah, he came down pretty hard. Was it a little bit of David Perron lifting his stick at the same time? Yeah, the stick broke. So the referee, that's an easy call. Mm-hmm. But Tucky was mad. The bench was upset. And you can have negative energy. And that we've seen a lot of negative energy. You're 0-3. You're down 2-1. You're going on a 10-second 5-on-3. You failed. You missed a challenge. It could have been negative energy. It wasn't. So let's give him credit for that. Let's give him credit for spinning some negative energy. The king of negative energy is Jordan Binnington. And Jordan Binnington shows negative energy all the time. But I heard him talk this summer in an interview about how with age, with experience, with maturity, he's able now to, at times, turn the negative energy into positive energy and get himself going in a positive way. Now, sometimes he loses his mind. And that's going to happen. And sometimes the Sabres and Lindy Ruff, and they may have negative energy and just go down the path of negative energy. But they were able to flip it to positive energy, which was great. Ottawa, they got a little negative energy, and they kind of went down that way. They had a push early in the third, but they kind of went down. Man, they're giving up a ton of goals, right? And it's not just their team play. I feel like goaltending is a struggle now for them in the start of the season with their efficiency and making the key saves at key moments. The Sabres took advantage of that.
Yeah, Ottawa's given up 18 in the last three games, all of them losses, obviously, but there were a couple of empty netters by Nashville in there.
Yes.
And Ottawa, by the way, has to return home to face a resting and ready Seattle team that is off to a 2-0-1 start amidst an 11-game NHL schedule tonight, of which we'll talk about more.
They can score, too. Seattle can score. They've got guys that have shown up at the start of the year.
Yeah, I mean, historically, Seattle has shown us flashes where they go on runs, where they look like an incredibly balanced team. And then, you know, based on the number of coaches they've had, they clearly don't sustain that. But there are 11 games in the NHL tonight and endless stories. That's why Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN, will join us at the bottom of the hour. More from last night and from the standpoint of not only Benson coming in, but do you feel like Doan had 3 assists, Benson had 4, again, multi-goal scorers. Do you think they found something, anything, when it came to pairs or line combinations last night?
Well, the interesting thing is that early in the second period, when really the Sabres got themselves going, well, they lost Danforth to an injury, lower body injury, after 2 shifts in the second period. They lost Malenstein for the major, probably the second half of the second period. He came back in the third, and they played with 4.5 defensemen. Like, when you look at the ice time, they really used Power, Timmins, Dahlin, and Bryson. They were the 4 that had a lot of ice time. Like, Bryson was a little behind, and Ryan Johnson was a lot behind. So they really went with 4 defensemen and a mix and match of the forward groupings because they were missing. But I do feel that maybe in this situation, I wouldn't say all the time, like shorten your bench, go to 4D, go to three lines. But in this situation, it was good. Why? Because there was a message sent by Lindy Ruff to his team, like to Yuri Kulik and to the rest of the team, that it's not good enough. It has to be better. And so if you're a player, if you're Tage Thompson or Alex Tuck or Ryan McLeod or Jason Zucker or Don or whoever, and the coach is challenging the room, you want the opportunity to go out on the ice as much as possible to go out and really be able to make a difference. Now, the funny thing is Josh Doan didn't play a shift for the first 10 minutes of the second period. And it's not because he was being benched. It's because there was special teams. Mm-hmm. And it was penalty kill over penalty kill and penalty kill again. And he didn't see the ice. But when he got an opportunity to go on the ice middle of the second period, he made it count. So some guys played a ton. Some guys didn't play as much. The rhythm was really weird. But I felt like that maybe is a positive again for Lindy Ruff saying, this was not a typical 1, 2, 3, 4, let's roll the lines, let's go. Right. There was a lot of mix and match, and the guys responded with the mix and match.
Right, and a reasonable assumption would be it's going to need to be more of a four-line game against Florida on Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. Now, the Panthers have lost two in a row after falling to Detroit 4-1, two empty net goals for the Wings, so it was really tied up until 2 minutes left. Mm-hmm. But Florida's in action against New Jersey tonight, so it's, you know... It'll be what in your mind, not to spend too much time on it, but like what will be the biggest thing on the heels of first win and eight goals and the reality that Florida and Ottawa are completely different? What's the one big thing for Saturday?
Well, the one big thing is speed, and which we saw, and we saw in the second period. Listen, if you were to turn the TV off after the first period last night, the Sabres had zero shots at 5-on-5. They only had three shots, and that was the three power play shots. And one of them was not really technically a shot. Jack Quinn missed the net and hit the goalie in the back and went in. And you probably turned it off saying, ugh, that was not really the way it goes. The last 40 was great, but it was because of speed. It was because of the skating. And that's the number one thing the Sabres have to take in against Florida. The rush chances all of a sudden happen again. You're creating 3-on-2s, 2-on-1s, guys going down the wall, the wing with speed. That guys on the forecheck, creating turnovers. That was speed. That was skating. Take that against Florida. Florida doesn't have Matthew Tkachuk now, doesn't have Barkov. They don't have Kulikov. Like, they're banged up too. Ottawa was banged up without Brady Tkachuk and playing Livy Marilainen in that, but Florida's banged up too. So you come at them with speed, and you're going to get the opportunities you were able to earn last night against Ottawa.
They only play the Senators three times this year, so just two to go. That might be unfortunate news for the likes of Ryan McLeod, who's been really good against Ottawa the last season and a bit, and Jack Quinn too. So Jack's now 28 away from your projection, 30 goal scorer.
Well, he's on pace for what? Like, he's got 2 in 4 games, so he's on pace for 40.
It's a good, I mean, you're feeling good about it, but
I'm feeling what one game does though. One game changes the expectations a little bit.
But in all seriousness, what does it mean for Quinn? Because of what you've been seeing and what you need to see.
You know, remember, so was it last year, like Quinn was struggling to score and then he got an empty netter. And I said, you know what, sometimes an empty net goal is it's fun to see that one in that goal column, and the empty net is going to get you going. And it didn't take off. It took a lot longer. That first goal yesterday is one of those where you're given a gift. Like, it's a good bounce. It's a gift. What I love is the confidence that I saw in the second goal. Mm-hmm. So it didn't take 4, 5, 6 games to see the flash that we know Jack Quinn can have. When he took that puck from Krebs on that 2-on-1, the confidence to take it, like, he's got a great shot. He could have just defaulted to, I'm going to shoot and hope. No, he read the play well. He saw the goalie was late on coming across, that the left knee was already sliding down. If I go across grain, there's no way he can put an edge and come back with me. The confidence, right? So, yeah, I love that. The lines were different. Obviously, you know, Benson was back in the lineup. Mm-hmm. Kulik was on the fourth line. So there was a lot of changes in the line. But individually, I felt there was a lot of guys that played well, that showed well, and Quinn was one of them.
The player of the game bestowed the saber from the captain, Rasmus Dahlin, was Alex Lyon. A quick thought on him after his first win.
Well, the expected goals at the end of the night were 4.5 to 4.5. Now, it was 5.5 to 4.5 because of the empty net goal, which was, funny enough, the first shot was blocked. So it was a lot harder than what an empty net goal usually is. But yeah, it was an even chance type of game, quality chances. Mm-hmm. The model, when you look at the expected goals early in the second period, had one of those massive spike go trending up for the Ottawa Senators. They had a ton of chances. Yes, Pinto scores on that deflection. That was early in the third. Sorry. Yes, Sanderson scored on the scramble. But before and after, there was multiple high danger scoring chances that Alex Lyon was really good on. And that's a reward. Like, look, I know Rasmus Dahlin gives Lyon the saber. You got Benson with now 4 assists, Doan with 3. You got guys with 2 goals. But that's a reward for Lyon for the first 3 games of the season and finally getting his first win in the fourth game. Saying, you know what? You were the best player for us for the 3 losses, and we did not forget about it, and you were really good in this game, and we want to reward you with it.
Sabres are now 13th on the power play in the NHL.
Okay. Top 10, top 15. That's between 10 and 15, that's where you can see your power play was effective. The power mm-hmm. play did something. Now, they were 3-for-3. I would love to say, hey, you know, could we have used one of those power play goals in the Rangers game? Could we have used one of those power play goals in the, you know, the Pittsburgh game, like in the Boston game, I should say? Yes, that would have been great because that would have made a difference. But mm-hmm. hey, we'll take them when they come.
So Buffalo next against Florida on Saturday. It is, of course, an afternoon game starting at 1. Mascot Madness we'll get into a little bit later on in the show after a really nice appearance from Sabretooth on our pregame show last night. Quickly, around the NHL.
Let's mention that Sabretooth, as clumsy, as big as he can be, is not as clumsy as I am, because what happened on the set yesterday? I have my little Coca-Cola, my little glass behind. Sabretooth comes in. Like, he's able to avoid it. Now, Chrisanne, our boss, was quick to remove the Coca-Cola. As soon as we put it back, I knocked it with my foot and spilled it all over the floor. So, yes. So, Sabretooth has cat-like reflexes and agility, despite his big size.
1-0 in home whites.
Yes. Fantastic. And I did get a lot of reaction on social media from fans saying, both X and Instagram, saying, hey, you know what? Whites at home, that's the way it should be. I think there's a generation of people that remember the whites at home through the 80s and 90s was the thing. Mm-hmm. Although when we go back in the history of the NHL, number one, back in the days, they only had one jersey, mm-hmm. you know, and that was the darks. Like they were their darks. That's why the Rangers were called the Blue Shirts and whatever. That's what it was. Number two, when they ended up with a dark and a white, dark was at home. That's what they did. So, you know, that's what it was. But then they switch. And, you know, in time, they switch. I don't recall when exactly, but my generation, it was white at home. It looks so much better. Mm-hmm. It looks cleaner. And Ottawa got to feature their third jerseys, which I really liked, but it gave a different look on the ice. And I love whites at home so much better.
11 games tonight, 3 others last night. Real quick, anything dazzling or disturbing from Detroit and Florida? The Red Wings win for a third straight time, despite Lucas Raymond remaining day-to-day with an upper body injury.
Okay. Well, the Red Wings offense, like, I know they well, technically they scored four, but it was two empty netters. Mm-hmm. Patrick Kane's got two. Their power play, the Red Wings power play moves the puck really well. I didn't do my homework to know where Detroit is right now in the standings on the power play, but it seems like they've moved the puck well, and Patrick Kane got himself a goal on mm-hmm. the power play. That ends up being the game-winning goal. So that was, I think the Red Wings, got to keep an eye on them.
Their power play is sixth at 26.7.
So here you go. Dazzling power play for the Red Wings. It led to their power play goal. Because I'm going to pick a dazzling play out of this one, my disturbing play of the night, unfortunately, was Joel Ofer with the St. Louis Blues, their backup goalie, but he's been really good for them. The Blues get victimized, giving up 8 goals to Chicago last night, but it started bad. Ofer was behind the net, and he was trying to be like Kel McCarr by making a quick pass to the low center in the middle of the ice. And that went nowhere, and Ilya Mikheyev was rewarded with an empty net. So that's how it started for St. Louis against Chicago, and it didn't really go well. So that was disturbed, the Ofer giveaway on that goal.
Yeah, there's a lot to chew on there. Here's my here's my this or that for you.
Yeah.
Higher percentage. Jake Neighbors' shooting percentage so far, or Hofer's save percentage last night?
Wow. What's Neighbors at? He's got 4 goals?
Yeah, on 6 shots.
Okay, so I will say that Neighbors has a higher percentage. No,
Neighbors is not. Neighbors' shooting percentage is 66.7.
Yeah.
Hofer's save percentage last night was 68.
So it's really close. That's a tough look.
22 shots, yeah.
That's a really tough look. I mean, it's worse than the old John Tortorella 75% rule. That when you're below 75% Tortorella rule, mm-hmm. that's not good.
By the way, to put a bow on the Red Wings, Cam Talbot is 3-0. Gibson has yet to win.
Only had the one game, and it wasn't a good game. He didn't look good. And I still think Cam Talbot is a very capable goaltender. Now he's older, and you know this will be an interesting dynamic in Detroit. But for me, I look at Talbot. If he can stay healthy, he's their guy. He's their number one, despite the fact that they acquired a $6 million goalie in John Gibson in the offseason.
The Hawks have won 2 in a row. Calgary has lost 4 in a row as they fall in the Battle of the Coolies last night.
Yeah, and there was a Logan Cooley breakaway on Devin Cooley, and Devin Cooley was able to make the save. But unfortunately for Devin Cooley, after a 1-0 first period for the Flames, the Utah Mammoth were able to come on strong after that. And you know, the run support against Calgary is not really there.
Well, this is the thing, Marty, and this was the whole thing last year that prevented them from making the playoffs by an inch. They were historically low scoring for a team that was in contention. And now they've lost 4 in a row. So, like, what's their deal? What are they going to do?
Well, I feel like they have if you're looking at this year, you're probably not doing anything right now because you're saying, okay, let's try to maybe switch the lines, you know, get healthy, get all the bodies in, and let's go. But if you're thinking, let's forget this year. We're still building towards where we want to be. But last year, they were so close. They were 96 mm-hmm. points. 96 made the playoffs. They just didn't. Tiebreaker, right? Mm-hmm. So, but if you're looking at the years to come, I'm going to say, and maybe we can ask Darren Dreger about this when he joins us at the bottom mm-hmm. of the hour, mm-hmm. Rasmus Anderson.
Hey, you're stealing UFA. My notes. That's all I wanted to talk about with Dreger.
But you're not trading him this year if you want to make a push because he helps you defensively and offensively a little bit. But if you're saying, let's forget about it, we're going to maybe get some picks, some prospects, maybe flip that and get somebody in the offseason, then I think Rasmus Anderson is number one on the list.
Right. And obviously they are missing Huberdeau. That does not help their cause. Adding to the long list of teams who are without at worst, a top six, if not a top line player, right?
Yeah, and Jonathan Huberto, despite the fact that he may never return to what he was with the Florida Panthers, 100 points and everything, mm-hmm. he's still a really good player. But, you know, you go into the season now where you ended up beating the Edmonton Oilers in a shootout 4-3, but that's because Stuart Skinner gave you a goal to make it 3-3. You got a couple of lucky bounces, mm-hmm. and then you scored one against you scored four against Vancouver. That was a 5-1 Vancouver win.
Right.
You only scored two against St. Louis, two against Vegas, and one against Utah. The offense is where it was last year, and that's a problem for Calgary.
Right, and in these low-scoring games, they've had some leads disappear, which is, and that's not on goaltending, obviously. Wolf's been pretty good, and Cooley was good last night. He stopped 29. There was an empty netter for Utah that sealed it in a 3-1 win. Tonight, amidst the 11 games, there are six teams that do not have a loss in regulation time: Seattle, Colorado, Edmonton, Carolina, Dallas, and Vegas. We'll touch on a lot of things around the NHL when we come back. Sabres win for the first time last night, 8-4 over Ottawa. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN, coming up on Sabres Live.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy Mumford & Sons Day at KeyBank Center tonight. And we're just a few weeks away from another big event. We want you to enter now for a chance to win a team-signed jersey from both teams that are participating in the Rivalry Series matchup, Team USA, Team Canada, women's hockey. The next step in this rivalry, as we inch closer to the Olympic Games, takes place right here, KeyBank Center. Tuesday, November 8th, tickets are available now. And for your chance to win the team-signed jerseys, visit sabres.com/enter. What do you think, Marty?
I think I want to enter. Am I?
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
About to?
You're not a. Are I you, mean, I are you think a collector? It
would be, so here's the thing. I played with Rob Ray, and Rob Ray was a massive collector.
He's
of
a hoarder.
Everything. He's a I hoarder, think. But he's also is a stealer because he stole some of my gear from my, from my stall. Like I'm like, where's my blue, dark blue blocker and glove that I had stashed underneath my stall? And then I went to Razor's house, and it's in his attic. So. But I tried to start collecting things, and then I gave up. And I should never have given up. But I have a few. I have a Dave Andrechuk stick. I have a Donald Odette stick. I have a Gilmore stick. That year, I collected a few things, and then I didn't do it again. So
Did you think the end was near at that point? Is that why you were collecting that year?
No, somebody told me do it early on and collect every year, right. And then I just did it for the 1 year, and then I didn't do it anymore.
Hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN is with us. Dregs, were you a collector at any point?
No, not really. Back in the early days of the hockey cards, I had a few, but then I realized that what I thought were not so good cards, and I can't really think of a good example. Brad Park maybe comes to mind.
Sure,
but. If you found a way to clip them into your spokes of your bike, they made a real cool motor sound. So it didn't take me long to rip through a good collection of hockey cards. So no, not really. No, I wasn't much of a collector.
They were also really good for playing, like instead of playing the bubble hockey, you use the nets and you use the puck, but you use cards, hockey cards to play like on the floor.
Yeah.
So you like that was good. But then they would get a really good bend in them and the corners were wrecked. But, funny enough, my dad tried to collect, like when I started having hockey cards, he's like, I'm going to go to the card shows and whatever, and I'm gonna get every single one of your cards.
Yeah,
that's impossible. Like I'm no Wayne Gretzky, but still, like there's so many different variations of cards he's like, this one has a gold, a blue, a silver, a 1 out of 30, a 1 out of 100. Like he's like, I quit. So he started it, but then he quit also. So Me and my dad, both collectibles quitters.
Well, obviously, it's an interesting start to the season, Dregs. You know, in small sample sizes, people really react, if not overreact, to two wins in a row, three losses in a row, all of that. Buffalo's in the win column after an 8-4 win over Ottawa, a team that is now lost three in a row. But there were so many scorers on the sheet for Buffalo last night. Alex Tuck finds himself as one of those players, and this market continues to be interested in what's next for Tuck and the Sabres.
Yeah, and I get that. You know, when you get through some of the mega deals that we've already seen, minus, of course, Connor McDavid, which is the outlier, then there is another tier of these players that need contractual attention. And Alex Tuck is right near the top of the list for me. Adrian Kempe in LA is another. I wish I could tell Sabres fans, yep, they're working hard, they're grinding away on this thing in negotiation, but that's not true. But I wouldn't look at it as a negative either, that they're not in heavy lifting negotiations, because, you know, the club has made it clear to the Tuck camp that they'd like to sign him. Alex Tuck has made it clear that he's open to extending in Buffalo. But you do have to take the start of the season as a factor, maybe not a primary influence, but, you know, what if a slow start turns into another, you know, abysmal 10, 15, 20 games into the start of the regular season? Okay, well, maybe Tuck's view is a little bit different at that point. And maybe management has to look at Alex Tuck as a significant asset, because in the insider business, there is never a shortage of finding general managers who are looking for that type of player, obviously, in season. It doesn't happen very often in the first half of the year. And then, of course, you look into the second half and you look towards the NHL trade deadline. So I think for the moment, it's more likely that Alex Tuck extends in Buffalo. But let's see how much relief the Sabres get from that one game win over a pretty good Ottawa Senators team. You know, banged up, of course, without Brady Tkachuk. But why can't they build off an 8-4 win? They certainly can.
Yeah, they can. Let me ask you this, though. So Kaprizov goes to $17 million, but McDavid takes $12.5 million. So you're like, okay, those are – let's throw them in the garbage. But obviously the Eichel deal.
Connor.
Kyle Connor deal. Like, it brought the market back to a place where we thought it was going to be. So, you know, when I thought of Tuck – you know, originally it was like maybe in the 8.5 to 9, and there's talks of maybe it's, you know, double digit, like 10 plus. Like, where do you sense that the market is going to go for Kempe and Tuck and those, that second tier player?
I mean, I feel like it's got to be up around the 10 million range.
Okay.
You know, again, you're simply projecting. And if you're if you're Tuck or you're Kempe and you're looking at a long-term deal here, which they would be, of course, you know, you are projecting beyond what next year is. I had a GM suggest to me that there's a sense the cap could claw up to $107 million next year. Well, it's slated for $104 million. And then the year after, $120 million. Well, it's slated for $113 million. And just to be clear, you know, I checked with NHL sources and they said, No, there's no truth to that. That could be wishful thinking by some player agents that, well, what if this happens? Well, the league right now is saying we haven't talked to the Players Association, so there's no reality to that. But what you're doing is projecting. So if you're Alex Tuck, is 8.5 getting it done? When 4 years from now, maybe that salary cap is around $120 million. And the answer to that is it probably isn't enough. And look, there was some pushback. You know, we mentioned Eichel, we mentioned Kyle Connor. And I do think that there was at least a hint of influence. As soon as McDavid got the 2 years at 12.5, that brought, you know, maybe some of the other projections back into reality. There's no way that Kyle Connor thought he was getting anywhere near $15 million. He knew that. But I can tell you, all along, that negotiation in Winnipeg was more about what does the structure look like? Is Winnipeg finally willing to give in on signing bonus money, which they did? But all along, the AAV target was the Marner deal in Vegas. Well, Kyle Connor got basically what Marner got in Vegas, right? So that tells me that neither the McDavid deal nor the Kaprizov deal with the Minnesota Wild really had any impact in what Jack Eichel signed for, what Kyle Connor got with the Jets.
Is signing bonus money, because we look at Lane Hudson, right? Yeah. Like Jackson Lacombe gets $9 million and Luke Hughes get $9 million, but they get $9 million a year moving forward, where Lane Hudson gets, what is it, 12 in the first year, but it's $11 million bonus. So on July 1 next year, $11 million. And then on July 1 the year after, $11 million. So in the first calendar year, he'll get $24 million instead of the 18, right?
Right.
So is signing bonus now back to where it was? Because it went away for a little bit. Like, it doesn't matter on signing bonus, but now it seems like it's the one thing players are asking for.
Absolutely. And look, I think it was reported, but I know it to be fact, so I'll share it. I didn't at the time because, I was asked not to. But I know the Winnipeg Jets did talk with their key guys, right? They talked to Scheifele, Hellebuck, Josh Morrissey, to just let them know, look, when we get this Kyle Connor deal done, and it was probably just before he signed, it's likely going to include signing bonus. Are you guys fine with that? Are you okay with that? Well, because Hellebuck didn't get it. Scheifele didn't get it. And Morrissey probably said, well, I'm 100% on board with it because my deal is coming up and I'm going to get it, right? So sure, it matters. It matters a lot. And, you know, to go back to Lane Hudson, again, it was reported that the Montreal Canadiens offered an original deal where he could have got more money in the grand scheme of things, but there was a deferred money element to it. And I know, because I know the agents who work inside Cortex, who represents Lane Hudson, vehemently opposed to the deferral as an option. And I would be too. If I were a player, I would want, if I'm in a position where I can demand $11 million or in Eichel's case, 16 and change for the first 3 years, at 4 years maybe of that contract, right? In signing bonus money, I'm taking my cash now and I'm going to do with it whatever I want, not spend it. I'm saying invest it and do whatever. The deferral option for young guys makes no sense to me. None. Doesn't make any sense. So signing bonus is just the reality. It's like the no trade and the no move clauses, right? Everybody can demand them when you've got a market and you have that type of leverage.
So there are a few teams that are, struggling. Calgary's one of them. They've lost four in a row. We mentioned Huberdeau not in the lineup, so that hurts. But Rasmus Anderson was a big talking point in the offseason. So what does the challenging start for Calgary mean for their makeup?
Yeah. Well, I think predictably we all expected it was going to be a challenge for Calgary this year. But we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. No different than Buffalo or any club that struggled. It is a long 82-game regular season, so we can't write them off just yet. But you wondered whether or not the Rasmus Anderson thing would become a distraction. I don't think that it has. But it can't be moving forward. We wondered where the offense was going to come from. Is Nazem Kadri going to carry that load? Coronado had a good year last year. Can he duplicate that? I mean, they have some interesting offensive pieces. And then Dustin Wolf, of course, has got to have the type of year that he had. Their goaltending in general. And that's a lot to ask, because many of those pieces fell into the puzzle last year to make it interesting. And it doesn't look from the early goings here that that is going to happen again. So what we're fixated on, is what is Craig Conroy going to do? And is he more likely to try and peddle off Rasmus Anderson? Not this early, but when you get to the U.S. Thanksgiving mark, you even get to Christmas, and you're by far a non-playoff contending team. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you are better off to, try and move a primary asset. And maybe there's a team out there, I'm sure they've already presented their interest and offers, perhaps, on Anderson to Craig Conroy. It goes, I'd rather have him for a full second half of the regular season. So in that case, I am going to overpay to acquire him. So there's lots of storylines to follow with the Flames.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts that could happen in the next little bit here. Florida, obviously, no Barkov, no Tkachuk. There's injuries. Now, Brady Tkachuk is getting a second opinion, and the word is maybe today that we'll find out. So when the Sabres play the Ottawa Senators next, which is December 23rd, 2 months from now, is Brady Tkachuk playing? Is he just returning to the action? What do you think the timeline for his right wrist arm injury is going to be?
Yeah, I think it's going to be in that 8-week vicinity. I really do. Again, we're waiting official confirmation from the Ottawa Senators whether or not surgery is happening. You know, we'll find that out in the hours ahead here. But this isn't going to be a 4-week deal like Travis Green suggested it could be. Mm-hmm. Now, he was just dealing with the information he had at the time, and we know that Brady Tkachuk has sought a second opinion. But that's an enormous hole. And now you start to question, okay, well, how strong is he going to be for the Olympics, depending on the significance of this issue and whether surgery is required? What does Steve Staios and the Ottawa Senators do? You don't replace Brady Tkachuk. You don't, obviously. And they've struggled. I mean, you know, you guys saw it last night. Green keeps hoping that the chemistry is going to evolve. They get Drake Batherson back, so he is definitely going to help moving forward. But it right now is chemistry and execution and the lack in both. So Steve Staios is hoping internally that they can figure it out, because there is no quick fix. But I could also see Staios, you know, getting into that realm of shopping for something much bigger up front in the weeks ahead.
Well, Pinto is now tied for the league goal scoring lead with 5. And I thought Stützle was absolutely flying last night. He missed a couple of glorious opportunities, but man, does he look good. And Darren, we will talk to you next week. Thank you very much.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
And we want to remind you to bid now on game-worn jerseys for the 24-25 season. Proceeds benefiting the Sabres Foundation. You can visit sabres.com/auction today. It closes, the auction does, on October the 19th. Back after this on Sabres Live.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are just 2 days away from hosting 8 of Sabretooth's friends from around the NHL in Western New York for our inaugural Mascot Madness game, Saturday against the Panthers. Doors open at 11:30 at KeyBank Center. Puck drop set for 1. First 5,000 kids in attendance to receive a commemorative Sabretooth beanie, which was displayed last night on our pregame show. Yeah. And we'll have multiple stations throughout the arena to meet, take pictures with our 8 attending mascots. So bring the family early. My question to you, Marty, is will there be a late addition to the Mascot Madness in the form of a rather large, rather impressive new NHL mascot in Utah named Tusky?
Tusky the Mammoth. And look, on this day in 2025, which was yesterday, Tusky was born, came out of the ice igloo, right? The Nordiques logo, if you want to say, and he busted out of there. You know what? When I saw Tusky, I thought of a few things. Some people thought Mr. Snuffleupagus from Sesame Street. I didn't see it. I thought of Manny from Ice Age and a little bit of Monsters, Inc., right? Like, that's what I thought. Like, Manny from Ice Age meets Monsters, Inc. When that mascot came out, like, I love the head. I love the tusk, the trunk and everything. But it's almost like he wanted to look big. Like, he boosted the shoulders and had an intimidating, like, approach to it. But look, everything that Utah has been able to do, it's been great. And Tusky fits in. I mean, he's
pretty good skater, no?
Pretty good skater, moved well. But is that going to be the same impact Gritty had in Philly? I don't know. I love my Sabretooth. I love mascots, so I thought that was a good addition to the NHL fold.
Well, I knew that the dark blue Mohawk would be up your alley based on last year, so I sensed that there would be a buy-in from you.
There needs to be a little bit more of a yellowish green kind of tip to it, like I did. But yeah, but also the fur seems to have kind of ice stuck to it, like mm-hmm. it's like mammoths are from the ice age. That so it feels like very authentic. I thought they did a great job with it.
Real quick, anything stand out from the schedule tonight? Like, will the Rangers, given that they're back on the road, will they score in Toronto?
I would think they will score. They've got 10 goals on the road, nothing at home. They've only played 2 games on the road, 3 at home. There's a lot of really good late games. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going to be kind of tuning in. I'm actually making my way to Toronto, working with Dregs tonight on that Rangers Leafs game. But I'll be catching a lot of the late night action and be recapping all of that tomorrow.
Edmonton is at the Islanders. So yes. This is a really good matchup, not only for historic, remembrance, but just because of the talent that's on display. Who leads the Oilers most shutouts in franchise history? Real quick.
Most shutouts? Grant Fuhr?
Tommy Salo. No I couldn't way. Believe it when I read it today. We'll leave you on that note and see you tomorrow on
for
Sabres
one.
Live.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.